case, the United States versus Hewell. Mr. Flynn.
Judge Flom, Judge Mannion, Judge Tinder, counsel from the government. I'm here on behalf of David Hewell to respectfully request that this court remand this case back for sentencing. And the basis for that request is that at the time of sentencing, the judge was clearly influenced by an erroneous interpretation of fact in a psychosexual evaluation that was done of Mr. Hewell. It's important to note that prior to our request for the downward departure and prior to the judge's ruling at sentencing, the judge made the following finding, and this is listed at page 10. It's in the transcript and in our brief. In his favor, I can't find any evidence in all the reports that he has harmed or even attempted to harm or entice any minor into this type of posing for pornographic images. But the offense is very serious. What he is going for him, I suppose, in terms of a downward departure, would be, as counsel points out, his life expectancy, which I am considering, the fact of no criminal history. He does have health problems that I have looked at. And I've also looked at the fact that he's worked all his life and been in the armed forces and served his country. The reason this is crucial is it's clear that this is not harmless error, which is one of the alternative responses the government has, because immediately prior to sentencing, he talks about how difficult it is for him to make this decision. And ultimately, he's concerned about the safety to the community. And because he believed at that time that the psychosexual evaluation found that he was a high risk of recidivism, because I think of an incorrect interpretation about this preference for males as opposed to sort of a polyglot attraction that Mr. Hewell actually had, that kind of overweighed his decision. He was sort of on the bubble, and then he goes with the need for more incarceration. Now, at the outset, I'd like to point out the time of his sentencing, Mr. Hewell was 62 years and some, I think approximately 2 or 3 months old. He had absolutely no criminal history score whatsoever. There were some minor traffic stuff in the past, but nothing that could be termed criminal. He had led, with the exception of the offense conduct here, a law-abiding life, had served in the armed services at a time period during the Vietnam conflict, and had worked, and worked hard, and had letters of recommendation from all his employers. He was working for the post office at the time of this offense. When he was arrested, they put him on administrative leave, and through the employee assistance program, he requested counseling. He entered into that counseling. And initially, it's true, I think, as many people who view this pedophile pornography on the Internet, he viewed it in terms of himself and didn't think of it as a victim or as sort of a victimless crime, that whatever harm was the harm he was doing to himself. But over time, as the reports indicate, he was frank, he was compliant, and I think the most important factor here at all, and I think it goes to the judge's decision, is that unlike many people who have this affliction, he overcame that initial denial. And I think one of the most important factors is when the pretrial services officer went out to do a home inspection, he had recognized that he could handle this if he avoided it altogether, but that he couldn't. So he had gotten rid of the additional materials that the government had not seized. He got rid of computer peripherals that were not involved in this. Those he turned over to his ex-wife and daughter. And there was adult pornography that he was in the process of destroying and getting rid of when she showed up. The reason that's important is the government points out in their brief that his own comments might buttress the judge's ultimate decision, that he said it was sort of like a quicksand and it was drawn back. But the point I make is that he did it. He's living out there in a rural area in a trailer home. When he had stuff that was left by the government that he was under no obligation to get rid of, he recognized. And there's indication in the record, mainly from his ex-wife, which may be unique, that she thought he was, she was astounded by this, but thought that he was a religious man and that he did have a moral compass. The reason this is important is all this is going through the judge's mind as he makes this very difficult decision. You got a 62-year-old man with no record whatsoever. And one of the comments the judge made was that, and this is the other thing I think where he erred, is that he couldn't be assured that he wouldn't act out against people again. Well, there really was no, there is some general talk when the counselor in his sort of overview and his discussion of what this diagnosis of pedophilia really is, talks in generally about, yes, people who prefer boys or males recidivated twice the rate. And while I'm on that subject, I just want to discuss what the base rates were. There were three risk assessment tests given. Two of them did not have a numerical value assigned to them. They were assessed as a low risk. The other one did, and the risk was that within a five-year period, there's a 7.6% based on their actuarial studies probability of reoffense. And so if you take that in context with the general statement that the counselor Brian Smith had made, and you doubled that, you'd have approximately a 14.6, which is what the judge was relying when he said it was a high risk. Well, the judge was clearly in error. This is not a case, and if you go work through the DSM-IV diagnostic criteria, they spell out exactly how you go out diagnosing this. And he was the exception. He did not prefer boys to girls. And in fact, much of the pornography that was seized did involve depictions of young girls, as well as the stuff that wasn't seized also included adults. It's clear he has a problem, but it's clear he recognized it. And while the judge may be entitled, after this court's ruling in McElrath, to totally disregard a psychiatric report, I don't believe a sentencing judge is entitled to rely on an erroneous fact or an erroneous interpretation of fact. And that's what clearly happened in this case. There's no evidence in the record. There was nothing in the assessment by Brian Smith to show that he had ever acted out in terms of there's a sort of general discussion of how these things can culminate, and there are some people that end up at the end of this continuum and do actually offend by taking photographs.
Mr. Flynn, excuse me, but didn't you kind of lead him down this path when you said at the sentencing hearing that when people were attracted to boys, you can double it, referring to the recidivism rate?
Well, the reason I commented on that, it was in the pre-sentence report, but... Well, I'd like to think I had the ability to lead the judge down the path of sentencing. I can't speak for what the sentencing judge had in his mind at the time, but I was commenting on a factor that had been brought up previously in the pre-sentence report.
But his diagnosis of pedophilia doesn't change, and it's chronic. And in the psychosexual report, there's even the indication that because he's a person who doesn't think of it as a victim, a crime with a victim, says something to the effect, unfortunately, this is often part of an individual sexual offense cycle, which culminates in actively attempting to solicit and seduce youth via the Internet. That's not a good prognosis.
Two things that counter that. First off, chronic, I think the word chronic doesn't necessarily mean escalating. It means repetitive. And here we have, if you go back to the very earliest ones, although there were a hiatus in there, it goes back 35 years, so it's clearly chronic in that sense. Secondly, that's a general statement. There's nothing in the record that shows that he didn't have Internet contact with anyone. This isn't a traveler case where people attract people from across state lines for sexual gratification. He didn't take pictures and post them. What he did do was through other pornography he had collected and gathered, he did post some of those, but he was not responsible for the actual taking or the actual physical assault that's involved in any kind of approachment to a minor. So what the Brian Smith, the evaluator, is saying there is that this often, but he didn't say that, he didn't make a finding specifically as to Mr. Hewell that was the case in this case. And, of course, the judge is concerned that that might culminate in something like that. But
in the pre-sentence report, the probation officer reports the phone call follow-up with Brian Smith from the psychosexual counseling service, indicating that Brian advised it would be exceedingly rare for someone with defendant's diagnosis and self-reported history to have refrained from acting on their interests.
There's absolutely, and the judge made that finding actually at the beginning, that there was no evidence in this record after reviewing all the reports that he had done that. The government seized that hard drive, was over it with a microscope, and he simply wasn't involved in emailing children. What he was doing was collecting the photographs and then posting them, some of them back up in an attempt to collect other pornography.
Mr. Flynn, what are we to make of the judge's decision to go with the low end of the guideline?
I think it buttresses my position that he was on the bubble. He was struggling and considering going lower, and then he felt, because he thought there was a high rate of recidivism, that he had to protect the public. I think it actually buttresses my argument that he was seriously considering, especially given the man's age. Now, along those lines, one of the judge's concerns is he wanted to maximize the amount of time because he thought that the sexual drive would diminish. I pointed out at the time that Mr. Hewitt was sentenced, he was already 62, and at the best, we were not asking for a probationary sentence. I noticed my light is on. We were accepting that at a minimum we were going to be getting the 5 years here. We were just asking for some downward departure.
Well, I guess the sentence was roughly 12 and a half years.
12 and a half years, yeah.
And I guess there's the potential to serve at least 9.
Yes.
So you would be on remand suggesting what?
What I was asking for was something close to the mandatory minimum. 5-6 years, I think, was what I had mentioned at sentence. If I could reserve a little time for you. Thank you.
And Mr. Love?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the Court. First, I am compelled to point out an error in the brief. At page 2 of our brief, Your Honor, in the third line, it says that the two-count indictment return included for count 1 the receipt of child pornography. Count 1 was the distribution of child pornography. The subsection that's cited is correct, and the description of the offense conduct in terms of distributing child pornography is correct. It's just that instead of the word receipt, it should have said distribution. Counsel spent quite some time with regard to the positive factors that had been pointed out regarding the defendant. And it's not my intention now, any more than it is ever my intention before a sentencing court, to try and diminish what are positive factors about any defendant. I don't believe that's our role. But we do have the responsibility of pointing out what other factors do apply. And in this situation, the record makes it clear that the trial court or the sentencing court did, in fact, consider the positive attributes that the defendant put in front of the court and argued. District court stated quite clearly that it took all of those into consideration. It did not add those up with the other factors and reach the result that the defendant would have liked, but the question is whether or not the sentence was reasonable. Before I go to the reasonableness, let me just say, first of all, that there were no objections by the defendant at the time with regard to the factual findings of the court. But this is a case, particularly in the first issue, with regard to the so-called heightened or double risk of recidivism with regard to males, where I believe it's very important to really hone in on the actual language that was used in the report. I think that's critical in terms of determining what the report really was saying and what the court could interpret from that report. The report itself and the diagnosis was that Mr. Hewitt was attracted to both male and female children. He was also diagnosed as being non-exclusive, which didn't go to gender, but went to adult versus child, so that he was attracted to both male and female children and both male and female adults. So the exclusive aspect of it doesn't really come into play in terms of talking about recidivism as it relates to male children. The other specific language used in the report with regard to the double risk of recidivism with regard to males was if the person had a preference for males. There was no finding, no stated finding in the report that Mr. Hewitt had a preference for males, male children over female. The report says he liked both. The ambiguity that those specific words leave is the question of whether or not somebody who has been diagnosed as liking both male and female will have a higher degree of recidivism risk with regard to males than they will with regard to females. And I honestly don't believe that that is addressed, made clear in the report. And I think the report is ambiguous, at least to that extent.
Yeah, Mr. Lowe, it is that area that I have some question. Judge Reinhart, in addressing the Alliance Counseling Service report, in talking about his primary concern is the obligation to protect the public, he says the following, as I understand it. He, meaning the defendant, is attracted to both males and females. And the recidivism is high if he's attracted to males, which is the case. And that there is no type of guarantee in any way we can change him or effectively monitor him on an outpatient basis that is poor. My question is, Love, is has Judge Reinhart read the report in a way when he says, which is the case, speaking of the recidivism being high for attracted to males, that he has made a determination of the report, an interpretation of the report, which says he's attracted to both, but he has concluded, because it includes a male attraction, that it's high, because that's the way his language seems to be. I guess what I'm asking you, is remand necessary for him to clear that up, or is that somehow consistent with what you view as his appropriate analysis of the report?
I view it as entirely appropriate, Your Honor, and not necessary for remand for these reasons. First of all, the judge did not say that he was finding that the defendant's recidivism risk with regard to males was twice as much.
No, he didn't say that, but he said, which is the case.
He just said high.
Recidivism is high if he's attracted to males, which is the case. Now, is he speaking about just repeating that recidivism with attraction males is generally the case, or is he speaking about this case, where we don't have a specific, I guess, finding of I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to look for a little help for you on how you read that language. It's a pretty critical paragraph because it's the one where he talks about the protections of it.
I can't tell the court what was in Judge Reinhart's mind.
No, I know you can't.
But from the context of it, I would say that my reading of it is that Judge Reinhart was looking at the overall report, and he was looking at something specifically in that report which says that the recidivism rate for people who like males, prefer or not, but like males, is higher. He didn't say it was twice as high. He just used the term high. So he didn't adopt it and say, I'm embracing this and I'm saying that this individual defendant has twice the risk of recidivism. He didn't go that far. I think he was speaking in the context of all the factors. Yes, he was talking about males, but he was also talking about the recidivism risk of the defendant generally, which wasn't just based on that one comment in the report about males. But there are a multitude of other comments in the report about the risk of recidivism, which would figure into the defendant's risk of recidivism.
The government is comfortable there was no misunderstanding or misinterpretation by the district judge of the report with regard to this increased potential for recidivism by a tilt toward one's gender as opposed to the other.
I don't, Your Honor. I don't believe the court was confused on that issue at all. And I don't think that it's at all clear that he made a finding.
I'm not suggesting it was a finding. I'm just, in the course of his reflections on the sentence, which any clearly is trying to balance all the interests. It's just whether or not, and I don't want to pick one line out in the course of many, but since this issue of recidivism seems to play into a consideration, obviously, of the length of the sentence, whether or not that in any way clouds the issue.
When it comes to the ambiguousness of the existence of that one sentence in the reports that says the risk of recidivism is twice as high if there's a preference, and I underline the word preference, for males. When it comes to that being ambiguous as applied to Mr. Hewald, who doesn't appear to have a preference for males but still likes males, then what is the risk of recidivism that the report is telling? And I would just point out to the court that as it is with when courts examine congressional actions, that I would not believe in a report presented by the defendant that the report writer would put something in there that was completely superfluous. And I believe Judge Reinhardt interpreted it in the correct way, and that is he just attributed a greater than normal risk of recidivism to the defendant, and one that was supported overall by the entire context of the of a report. And if I just go on briefly to the second issue, Your Honor, that is the assertion of the clearly erroneous finding by the court that the defendant posed a risk of acting out in non-voyeuristic activities. Judge didn't dwell on that, didn't say a lot about it, just said he can't be sure that it wouldn't happen and that it was a risk. He didn't say how great a risk. The report by the experts for the defendant support the fact that there is a risk there. The defendant would have the court believe that because there was no evidence of the defendant having ever engaged in any actual sexual molestation of a child, that therefore there was never a risk in the future. And that simply isn't realistic as to anybody in society. The court had before it a defendant who had engaged in crimes of a very serious nature with regard to sexuality in children, and the court was not required to assume that the defendant posed absolutely no risk of acting out in an actual sexual molestation of a child. And I think that would be wrong for the court to assume that. So for those reasons, we would ask the court to affirm the lower court.
Thanks, Love. Mr. Flynn? You had your time expired, but you may have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. Just very briefly, Your Honor, I think the court's analysis is dead on, and I would respectfully disagree with my colleague. I think at the crucial moment he made the decision, the sentencing judge was under the misimpression that the risk was high based on the report. And the reason for that is if you look at the test, there were three different tests that all say low. One puts a quantity on it, and it says 7.6% risk of recidivism, which is inherently a relatively low number. It's not zero, I recognize that, but it's pretty low. And then there's talk about doubling it, and it's in that context that he talks about higher. So I think if you examine the record as a whole, the report is summarized in the pre-sentence report and then in a supplement to the pre-sentence report, and the entire report is in the record. I think at the crucial moment he made that decision, he was acting under the erroneous impression that it was the clinical evaluator's opinion that he was a high risk of recidivism. Thank you.
Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.